Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Hello, this is Pete. I am one of the content producers here at Ethical Property Partners. As well as a podcast, we have our YouTube channel. And one thing that's been working brilliantly over there are our Sophisticated Saturdays. Now, this episode includes audio from a Sophisticated Saturday show where you'll hear about a deal that Frank has recently done. In the first part, you'll get all the numbers, so if you want to take part and work out how you'd do the deal, you can grab a calculator and make some notes before listening to the second part, where Frank will tell you exactly how he structured the deal in a sophisticated way. The third and final part is exclusive to you as a podcast listener, where Frank gets grilled by an expert investor and chats about the deal in more detail. So over to Frank.
Hi there, and welcome to another Sophisticated Saturday YouTube episode. Guys, I'm very excited today because we have Amanda Jarvis Doyle joining us to talk about one of her transactions. Now, Amanda, if you don't know her, is a master franchise area owner. So she, jointly with Pauline Chalmers, looks after all of the franchisees in England and Wales. She owns the rights to those two countries. She has been a phenomenal franchisee. She's been on board for just over 5 years now. And in today's episode, she's going to be explaining to you about a vendor and a property. So she's going to explain the situation, she's going to explain the vendor's property problem, and then she's going to explain to you how she really monetized it in real life, how much she made and how it worked. Guys, I hope you enjoy this episode.
My main concern when I started my property business was that I didn't have a huge pot of cash. I had around £20,000 in the bank, and my goal was ultimately to help my husband retire. He's a little bit older than I am. And so how was I going to develop my property business without and invest in property without having more than £20,000 in the bank? I quickly realised that I needed to generate more cash in order to develop my property investment quicker. I came across EPP and a system that enabled me to generate four times my income that I'd been having as a civil servant working for DWP. In my first 3 years on EPP, I probably did three transactions a year, but each of those earned me between £25,000 and £30,000 each. And that's remarkable. If you think about investing in property, typically you're leaving your cash in and it would take you years and years and years to get that money out. The way that I learnt from EPP to get my cash out in a creative way was actually to not buy the properties myself. I have built myself a portfolio, but it was to sell those purchases on to investors who didn't have the experience of investing in property, didn't want to make a mistake, or didn't have time to go out and find a property themselves and invest in it without making costly or personal choices. A lot of novice investors buy with emotion, and we look at the figures. We don't look at what you and I might want to live in as a property. We're looking at does it give a good return? Can I give my investor a good guarantee on what they are going to be earning for their property? The way that we do that is we are finding motivated vendors. Or I find motivated vendors from leaflet delivery. So I'm going directly to them. I'm not going to an estate agent, I'm going to an auction. I go directly to the vendors. I find those vendors who are motivated and work with them to find a solution for their situation. That situation then typically means that they either don't want to go on the market for one reason or another, or they need a quick sale, they need a certain sale. And the guarantee that I give them is that I will find a way to buy their property. If it isn't going to be on the open market, then we can actually find that solution for them. So I find the property. I then have an investor that is waiting. They've paid me a deposit to go and source a property for them. And I didn't think that I knew people who had money, because people don't walk around, do they, with a label on their forehead saying, I've got £30,000 in the bank and I want to invest it in property. So you have to start those conversations. And sometimes it's not easy to start those conversations. But you actually find that more people than you are aware have cash that is lying around in the bank that is earning next to nothing for them. And if you're offering them a minimum 8% return on their cash invested, then they would be delighted to know how you can help them with that. So in this scenario, I'm helping not only the vendor who wants to sell their house, but I'm also helping the investor. And the benefit of that is it's a three-way win. So it's a win for the vendor, it's a win for the investor, but it's also a win for me. I'm making a really great return on a property that I would alternatively have made good cash flow from over time and probably not left much of my own money in, if at all. But I'm making a good chunk of money that brings me cash flow into my business. I started with two or three properties a year. Last year, I did 10 of these transactions. It generated me £250,000 cash flow into my business. And I started 5 years ago. I've not been doing this for years. I've not been doing it forever. It's something that I've learned. It's a process and I follow the system. So what I'm trying to say to you is, you don't need a huge pot of money to get going with this as an option to start your property business.
This is the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast. To see more about our Sophisticated Saturdays, just search YouTube for Ethical Property Partners.
An example of one that I've done recently is the property, I'm in Derbyshire, so central England, so the property prices are relatively low in comparison to London. So a three-bedroomed end terrace property, and it was valued at £122,000 by the bank. I negotiated a purchase price with the vendor of £78,000. Now that was because the property needed a considerable amount of work. The investor paid the £122,000. So I made the difference between the £122,000 and the £78,000. So that's £44,000. That enabled me to do a comprehensive refurbishment and still take £32,000 out into my back pocket. When we talk about win-win solutions, this is a three-way win. So the vendor wins, they've found a solution to their property problem. In this scenario, it was actually an inherited property that was just really getting her down. She was paying, it was empty, she was paying bills on it, she was paying council tax, and she really didn't want people walking through her mother's house and tearing it apart because it needed a lot of work. She didn't want to have to constantly go back to bring up the memories of being in the property. She'd grown up in the property. So it's quite emotional for her to keep going back. So it was a win for her. It was a win for my investor because they only actually invested 5 hours of their time. They put their deposit in. I help them arrange the mortgage, I carry out the refurbishment, and I then tenant and manage that property for them. They have no concerns about dealing with compliance, all certifications dealt with, tenants are vetted and referenced without any concern to the landlord. They just sit at home and wait for their monthly amount to come into the bank. So it's a massive win, a three-way win. What more can anybody ask for? As you can see, the win here is I'd done a property deal. I ended up with more money in my back pocket than I had when I started. So it's a really easy way of doing this on a rinse and repeat and building your cash pot ready for you to start investing yourself.
Hey, Amanda, how are you this morning?
I'm really good, Frank. Thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for agreeing to this Q&A to follow up on the episode that you've recorded. So I'm going to jump straight in with my first question, if I may. In fact, this comes from a comment. So Adrian has said in his Adrian Sharma has said in the comments on YouTube, Amanda, you made £32,000 on this transaction, the one that you described where you sourced it at £44,000 below market value. You did £12,000 worth of works and your investor basically paid the full market value for the property. He paid the $122,000, which was the full market value, and you made £32,000. And Adrian's comment is, that doesn't seem very ethical.
That's really interesting, isn't it? I don't think I've got a single one of my investors who is dissatisfied or feels that they're not getting great value for money from the service that I offer them. In fact, I've got investors who come back time and time again for more properties. And so I think my question would be, maybe it's a mindset, or is it a mindset? Where I think Adrian might be coming from is, how can that be good value for money? That's perhaps where I think his query has arisen from, Frank.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because when I buy something on Amazon, in fact, I bought some chemicals yesterday for my hot tub. They were like $17.99 for this 5 kilograms of chemicals. And I thought that was quite expensive, actually. But I looked and all the other vendors were more. So I paid $17.99 for these chemicals. I don't think to myself, how much has Amazon paid for them? Did they pay £4.50 for them? And how much is Amazon making? I'm looking at the chemicals thinking, is that good value for me? It means that, you know, I can use my hot tub every day and it's nice and safe and balanced, etc. It's an interesting way of looking at it, that if you are earning a lot of money out of providing a service, that somehow he actually put that doesn't seem very ethical. Like, so is it unethical to make money? Is it unethical to make a lot of money? And I guess some people are uncomfortable with making money. How many homeless people have you helped to date over your 5-year journey, Amanda?
I think I currently house 17 people a night.
Awesome.
And over the time that I've been doing it, it's got to be in excess of 50 people
that you've
now
helped, and some of those will have moved on and got themselves jobs and got themselves their own accommodation. And that wouldn't have been possible if you weren't, you know, providing for your future, if you weren't able to sustain yourself financially. Fascinating. I think it says a lot about people's attitudes to money, actually, when they ask questions like that. Have you ever had a complaint from an investor when they've purchased a property at full market value?
No, I can categorically say I've never had a complaint.
And it was interesting, Liz, I think it was Liz, one of the team, I think it was Liz, but it might have been someone else, might have been Debbie or one of the guys in Serbia, responded to Adrian's comment and said, actually, our investors are delighted usually because although he paid $122,000 for the property, you then spent £12,000 on doing it up. And so he's got a minimum value of property of 134, but typically if you spend 12 grand on a refurb, you add at least double that. So he's probably got something like 140, 145, maybe even £150,000 worth of property for his 122 on day one, which is a massive leap in value without getting off his sofa.
Absolutely. I think I was looking at one of my very early transactions, Frank, and I was looking at the capital growth element of the property as well. These investors paid $120,000 for the property.
Different transaction to the one.
Different transaction,
yeah,
completely.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But they paid $120,000 for the property in 2018. The current valuation for that property is $140,000. So
wow.
In 3 years, their capital growth is £20,000. But not only that, they've had a consistent 12% return on the cash that they invested.
Wow. So if they bought it for 120 and let's assume they had a 75% mortgage, that's a £30,000 deposit. They would have borrowed 90. They put 30 grand in. They've made 12% a year. So let's just round that down for simplicity. So that's £3,000 a year for 3 years. They've made 9 grand. And then they've seen a 20 grand return. That's 29 grand on their 30 grand. That's nearly 100% return in 3 years. They've nearly got all their money back. In fact, I rounded a few things down. They have got all their money back within 3 years. That's unbelievable, isn't it? A 33% per annum return. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's incredible. That's where I think people miss the value from the service that we offer.
I don't think the investors miss it, but I think when people are coming from a traditional property investing perspective. They find it a bit incredible that you can make 32 grand without owning a property, et cetera, which leads me into my next question, Amanda. So you've talked a bit about turning discounts into cash flow. In the episode, you talked about doing 10 of these transactions, doing £250,000 in 1 year, which is amazing. What is the difference to you? What are the benefits to you of TDIC over a traditional flip? So if I was sat here not knowing what I know about EPP and turning discounts into cash flow, why didn't you just do those 10 transactions in a traditional way? Why didn't you buy them at, you know, the lower price and then sell them at the higher price?
That's a great question. The main reasons are that I never have to own the property. So therefore, I don't have the cost of owning the property. So that is, I don't pay stamp duty. I don't have to cover the cost of the property sitting empty whilst I do the refurbishment. Although I do pay 50% of occupancy to my investor, but you've got to remember that I've already had the payment by that stage. So it's not actually coming out of my pocket. It's coming out of the money that I've made already. So it's not like buying a property and then having to find the money to pay the mortgage. So I don't have to pay a mortgage on a property that I'm not gaining any rental income for. I don't have to own that property for 6 months before I can sell it on the open market. And I then don't have to sit and wait for somebody to come along and buy it and then go through the conveyancing process, because the conveyancing process at the moment is taking up to 4 to 6 months in some instances, even on straightforward transactions. And so if you add that on to the end of doing a refurbishment, then you can easily have a property sat empty for a year by the time you've done it. Now, if I was to buy that property with cash, I'm missing the opportunity of purchasing additional properties. But also, it's an expensive way of purchasing because I've got all that cash tied up. As I've said, I'm missing those opportunities. But also, it's risky. The market could change. I could put the property on the market and all of a sudden something has changed. Interest rates might have just gone up, or, you know, we have another COVID scenario. Now, obviously, COVID came along and we saw a boom like we haven't seen before. However, what we don't know is what the backlash of that is going to be. You know, when furlough ends, are we going to see the opposite? Are we going to see a market crash? It's possible. And so I haven't got that risk element. There's no risk involved in me flipping this property to a waiting investor who's paid a deposit.
You've explained that really clearly, Amanda. There's many different advantages, and the biggest one is your safety, isn't it? I love it. Thank you. So I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes of someone who wants to get into property. They haven't got tons of money, you know, they haven't got a couple hundred grand in the bank, so they can't just go buy a few properties. And they've watched this episode and they've heard you talk about flipping properties, putting good chunks of money in your pocket to build their war chest so that they can go investing. One of the concerns I think people might have is how to balance finding an investor with finding a vendor, and which comes first, and what happens if I find one and not the other. How do you do that, Amanda? How do you balance it? What happens if you really can't find an investor and you've got a desperate vendor, or you've got an investor who's been waiting a little while and they're saying, come on, Amanda, I want to get some money into property. How do you deal with it yourself? And what would your advice be to someone who's wanting to get into sophisticated flipping?
I have been in that situation. I've had times where I've found properties and I haven't got an investor and I've already got mortgages going through and it's difficult for me to buy another one at the same time. Or I've had scenarios where I've got an investor and actually the market is so buoyant that it's been really tricky for me to find a property quick enough for them. So I have had both of those scenarios. And I think that's where the value and the real benefit of being part of EPP comes into play. So the wealth of knowledge, experience, community that we have on EPP gives me that reassurance that if I have a property that I haven't got an investor waiting for, that I can come to the EPP community and somebody will either have an investor or will be willing to purchase that property and we can JV on it. And equally the same for if I've got an investor waiting and I can't source a property, but somebody else has got property coming out of property deals coming out of their ears and they haven't got investors waiting, then the same can happen there. And the amount of JVs that happen on EPP as a result of that is incredible. And I think it's reassuring. It means that I know that there is a system in place to help me if I can't solve that problem myself. And I know that I've got somewhere to go and people to turn to assist me with solving that problem.
And that's just massively reassuring, I imagine, knowing that if you make a commitment to a vendor or you make a commitment to an investor, you're not going to let them down because you've got that support network around you.
I've never let a vendor down on any transaction, which is, you know, it's one of our values, and I stand by it. I will find a way to make it work.
Excellent. Excellent. I like it. I like it, Amanda. Thank you. So my next question is, how do the mechanics work? So you've talked about TDIC, you find the vendor at the below market value price, you've got the investor at the higher price. But two specific questions that I think the guys watching and listening might have is, firstly, do you hide stuff from the vendor? So a bit along Adrian's, you know, lines of, you know, are you lying somewhere here? Are you hiding something from the vendor? And secondly, how do you stop the investor from going direct to the vendor? So how do you protect yourself? Because I imagine that would be a fear of someone who's not done this before. You source a property at, well, let's use the numbers on this deal. I think it was £122,000 value. And I think you paid 79 for it. Did I get that right? 79, 78, 78, I think it was. How do you protect yourself from that? So those are my two questions. Does the vendor know? Are you open with them? And secondly, how do you protect yourself from being cut out and not making any money?
Mm-hmm. So in answer to your question, so does the vendor know? So the vendor only ever deals with me. So I am their port of call. So the investor absolutely goes and looks at the property and agrees that they want to buy it. But I am only of the person that the vendor deals with, because that reassurance to the vendor that they're not going to be passed from pillar to post, they're not going to be speaking to somebody different every time that they have contact, is really, it's really important for them. And there's a great amount of trust involved in getting these transactions over the line. And so does the vendor know? The vendor knows from day one what my offer is. So the minute the first call that I have with them, they know that I'm going to be offering them below market value. Typically, that's 75% of what the bank values the property at.
And so that's completely transparent up front, is it? So
yeah, so it's up to 75%. Sorry, I misspoke slightly there, but it's up to 75% of what the bank's going to value the property at. And that's depending on if the property is in a good lettable condition. Does the vendor know that somebody else is going to buy the property? The vendor knows that it will be me or one of my colleagues that is going to buy the property. And so that's where I position them to know that even if it's not me that buys it, it will be one of my associates that will be buying the property.
And which of course it is. It's a business associate. It's one of your investors, isn't it? Yeah. And that reassurance, and you said it quite quickly and quite flippantly at the start of your answer, but that reassurance that they're only going to have to deal with you is massive, because if they think that all you're doing is going and finding them someone to buy the property, you're an estate agent then, and they know they can go and pay £1,000 for an estate agent, but they're happy to accept such a big discount on market value, and they know precisely how much. You know, in this example, the vendor knew to the penny how much lower than market value they were receiving, but they're happy to do that because of the certainty that you're definitely, I guess it's not that you're definitely going to buy it, but that they're definitely going to sell it. That's all they're worried about. They don't care if it's you or your husband or your business associate. They just want to know that it's definitely sold and within the time frame that you've agreed with them. So that's great. Mm. So really clear, really transparent with the vendor. They know what their property's worth. They know what they're receiving, etc. What about the investor? So you've just mentioned that you allow the investor to go around the property. That makes sense. They're spending a lot of money on it. What's to stop the investor, you know, dropping the vendor their mobile number while they're there or popping back around the next day? A, has that ever happened? B, what do you do to protect yourself? I guess also at the same time, what do you do to stop the vendor trying to sell it to someone else rather than your investor?
Really good processes is what stops all of that happening. And the first one is that my investors are positioned in such a way that they've paid me a deposit to go and source them a property. So they know how my system works. They know what to expect from me. So they know that they've paid a deposit to me and that I'm going to go out and find a property that matches their requirements. So it's only when I've found that property that I will then present it to them. And it's only at the stage that I've agreed with the vendor, actually got all the legal paperwork sent off to the solicitors and we've started the conveyancing process that I will introduce the investor to the property. So the property's already secured. It's already in the legal process. And if my investor doesn't buy, the reassurance to my investor is that I will, because it's a good enough deal for me. And so therefore, I will only present something to them that I would be willing to buy. So what stops them going directly to the vendor is it's already a done deal. It's already signed up and the system that we have means that all I'm doing is introducing them to a purchasing solicitor to say that they are now going to be the purchaser instead of me.
Mm. It sounds so simple and it doesn't sound a lot different to how most sources work, but in the same breath, it's completely different. So you've already help them to open a limited company. You've already, as an SPV, to purchase a property. You've already helped them to open a bank account for that company. You've already got them a decision in principle with the mortgage broker. You've mm-hmm. already introduced them to the solicitors. So they've done their know your client process. They've checked their ID with the solicitors, etc. And now the next part of the process is we introduce you to the property, come and have a look at it, brilliant, let's get you buying it. And it's just another part of the process. You mentioned the deposit in passing, but they've paid £2,000 when they've agreed to buy a property from you, not having seen yeah. one, you know, when they place their order with you. But then they pay another £5,000 when they've seen the property and they're accepting it. So they're like seven grand in to this property on the same day that they viewed the property. And so I can see why people would think that it's risky, but actually I don't think that thought has ever crossed the mind of any of my investors, and clearly it hasn't yours either. So I think if you do follow that process, that EPP process, and of course there are legal instruments in there, there's option agreements and the like that protect you from a legal perspective, but I think just emotionally the investor is emotionally invested in the process and the vendor is, and you're the process as far as they're concerned, you're the person. Mm-hmm. They would not want to try and do it themselves because they've come to you. The vendor's paying you a lot of money in equity and the investor's paying you a lot of money, £2,000, £5,000, buying the property at market value. And so they're invested in the process and they've all invested in you. I guess I'd liken it to someone going into a Ferrari showroom and there's a 200 grand Ferrari there. They say to the salesman, I'm trying to make it similar. They say to the salesman, I love it. You know, how much do I have to put down? He says, £20,000. No problem. Let me walk to the bank and go and get £20,000. And on his way to the bank, the guy that's buying the Ferrari passes a used car salesman and he sees a really nice Volvo there that's, you know, worth 50, but actually he can pick it up for 40. And the used car showman guy says, do you want to buy this now? You can have this for 40. But it's not what he wants. He doesn't want a Volvo that's a good price. He wants a Ferrari, and he's happy to pay full price for the Ferrari at 200 grand. And if you think back to our investors don't want to go to an auction and get 5 grand off or 10 grand off. They don't want to barter and negotiate with vendors. They don't want to chain chase themselves and chase the mortgage brokers and jump through all the hoops. They're happy to pay the Ferrari price, full market value, in order for us to run that system for them. And it's the same for the vendor. The vendor knows that they're taking a discount for the peace of mind of knowing it will be done. So sorry for my weird metaphor, but hopefully that explains it a little bit.
It's worth saying, so out of all the investors that I've sourced for, Frank, I don't think a single one of them has either been interested in sophisticated investing in any way or has had the time. I think it's probably been more along the lines of they've been novice and time poor in nearly every single one of the instances that I've had. And so from the perspective of being novice, you know, they don't want to make a mistake. They know that I'm doing the due diligence. They know that I'm going to do a refurbishment to a good lettable standard. They know that I then... I offer them a service of tenanting and managing on their behalf. Not everybody on EPP does that. And it's just something that I chose to do at the beginning of my journey. And I've continued to do that. But they know that I understand lettings and the rules and regulations and everything that goes with that. And therefore, they're not having to find a letting agent that they don't know whether or not is going to be right for them. They don't know that, well, the letting agent doesn't know the property in the detail that I know the property. So if I get any questions about anything relating to the house, then I can categorically say yes or no, it's not been done, or yes, it has been done, or whatever. They know that I'm going to provide the relevant certification that goes with letting a property legally. And they don't have the concern or the headache or the worry about any of that, that if you are time poor or you're novice, are really, really expensive, costly and worrying mistakes to make. They don't have any of that stress. That's something that I do on a daily basis, and that they're happy to trust that that's part of the service I'm delivering for them.
Amanda, thank you for coming on to this podcast to answer those questions. I think we've nailed the main ones that people ask. Guys, if you've got more, feel free to pop them in the comments. You can either pop over to the YouTube channel, Ethical Property Partners, or you can go to our podcast page on the EPP website, ethicalpropertypartners.com website, and you can pop any other questions you've got there, and I'll be sure to cover them in a future episode. But until next time, Amanda, thank you for joining us. I will look forward to you doing your next 10 turning discounts into cash flow deals and your next 250K. You are absolutely smashing it and showing what can be done in a really short period of time. I think you've been in EPP for 5 years now, which is the blink of an eye in an investing career, but boy, are you doing well. So Amanda, thanks for joining us, and
thank you
so much, and until next time, happy investing.
That was the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast from Ethical Property Partners. Use your podcast app to follow or subscribe so you never miss an episode.